Okay, welcome back to Jump Scare. I'm Chad Youngblood.
And I'm Betty B. Bentley.
And today we're here with the director of Z, Brandon Christensen.
Hello, hello.
So, we got a chance to view the movie a little earlier than today. Great. And I have to say, I really enjoyed it.
Good.
It's got a great feel to it, the design. I know it's a lower budget movie, but it doesn't look like that at all.
It looks great. Nice.
Yeah, it looks like a big budget movie.
Great.
And you really did a great job with it.
Cool, thank you. Yeah, it was a little bit more than we had on our last one. I don't know if you saw Stillborn, my first film.
No.
We played here at Popcorn 2 years ago with it.
That's the one we missed.
Okay. Yeah, it's similar in tone. You know, it's about it's mother-child kind of relationship. And I think that's just where I am in life right now. I've got kids and stuff like that. I've got a wife that is, you know, with our kids all the time. So I do see a lot of these scenarios playing out, at least if they're not happening for real, they're things that we're terrified of, like certain moments in this film that happen that as a parent, and you guys are, you'll start being like, don't look over the edge of that. That's not good. So yeah, it's all the anxieties that I'm finding as a parent, I'm able to sort of play upon, you know, on the screen, which has been fun.
Yeah, it kind of helps you work through some of that.
I think a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, sure. I definitely, as a parent, watching the film, I'm one of those, since I obviously love anything horror-esque, I'm like, as soon as my child tells me something that sounds completely insane, I don't know, I'm like, I'm going to believe the kid. This is happening, you know, and it's like you kind of try to keep it rational.
Right.
Because it can be completely irrational, but it's just like and also I'm Hispanic, so like superstitious, and I believe in ghosts and all that kind of stuff.
You should definitely check out Stillborn, because it's great for them. It's, you know, it's a newborn, but it's still, it played really well in like the Latin America, you know, all those territories and stuff like that. It did really well, because I think I don't know what it is, but people just love seeing moms scared.
Yeah.
Seems like it's just like such a visceral response when you see a kid on a screen, because your natural inclination is to protect them. So when they get into trouble, you're just like, oh, shit, I need to help, you know?
And especially when you're a mom, you really, like, it doubles that.
Totally. There's a connection that you can have that a father can't, you know, just because of the fact that you had a baby. And that was a big thing about Stillborn, is just like she had them for 9 months and the father didn't. So there is that disconnect built into the film. Not that I'd want to talk about that. But it's crazy. And actually, Z, my wife and I came up with that together, because we were talking about, I wanted to do something like a creepy kid, the Omen type of film. And my wife and I were talking about things and different things that kids are going through right now. And around that time, my then 6-year-old said that he was afraid of the girl with the green eyes in the closet in his bedroom. Like, and it's just like, oh my God, you go check that out. I'm not going, you know? So that kind of turned into like, well, what is this thing? Maybe it's an imaginary friend. And then that kind of started the juices going, and it was like really fast and furious. We wrote a first draft together, and then Colin Minahan, who I wrote Stillborn with, he came on board after the first draft, and we kind of recreated the third act. Like everything that's in the third act now was new for that draft. And it was just kind of finding what Z is and what Z meant and all that stuff. And I feel like we land in a pretty cool place.
Okay.
Go ahead. I say, you do a great job with like creating the tension of it and all that, because the scene, I don't want to give everything away, but there's a scene in a playground that was one of those like jump scares. The one I saw, you know, shooting through the tube there. That was this, like, you weren't expecting it yet.
Sure.
I wasn't expecting to see anything until later on. And when you see that, you're like, oh,
nice.
Oh shit, there's real something in there.
Yeah.
I was going to say spoilers.
I'll try to keep it vague.
Yeah. I'm terrible when it comes to that. I just want to like tell everybody everything, and then they're going to go see it anyway.
Sure.
So many people are just so into spoilers. This is a spoiler podcast. We should just rename it Spoiler Podcast. But yeah, expand upon kind of in that one scene. How did you, obviously we're seeing it from her point of view. So to have that image just happen so fast, I guess it's one of those, like, you didn't really want to show it all,
right,
you know, at the first take.
For sure. I mean, I think that's generally, at that point in the film, she needs to be starting to believe her kid a little bit more. And so that's kind of the point where everything kind of changes, where, like, oh, it's not just my kid's imaginary friend, something's actually there. And at this point, she doesn't know what's about to happen with her and everything. So at that point, we needed to see something just to make it believable to the audience that this woman is going to be dealing with something, that she's going to have this disconnect with her husband, because he just thinks it's an imaginary friend. Like, you know, he's a realist. This is, it's an insane situation to start believing in. So all of a sudden she's like, no, I saw this thing. And it's just like, you know, I mean, you guys, you've probably had situations where you just, sure, honey, you know, it's just like,
sure,
it's so unbelievable that why would I believe it too, unless I have proof. And so that sort of creates the divide for those characters. So you needed something, but it needed to be brief enough that there was still a chance that it was nothing. You know, it could just be her seeing things or something like that. And so I do love Sean Rogerson's monologue after that, where he kind of paints that story for her, and she's so lost in what he's saying, and then all of a sudden he just turns on, you know, and she's just like, oh, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, that was a jerk move.
That's funny. But so that's kind of the thing, is just, you have to give a subtle nod or a subtle glimpse of this thing, just so we start believing as an audience, too, that, oh, shit, something's actually happening here.
Yeah, the creature, when you see the imaginary friend later, looks really great.
Cool.
There's this being of, like, again, a goddess, you know, where you see the thing for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And was it done, was it a practical effect, or was it a...
Yeah, so that's the hardest thing about making this film, was like, everyone's like, well, what does he look like? And I'm like, I don't know, he's an imaginary friend, right? He's probably tall, I don't know. And so we spent, in pre-production, we were just trying to figure out, what can this look like? And we hired an artist to draw a couple things, but it was very, like, theatrical and wardrobe and stuff, and we're like, we don't have any money for all that stuff, so we just sort of stripped it down to just like, and you know, we found a really tall guy, this guy named Luke Moore, who was just totally game for it. He's kind of a character actor, but he was brought on, and he was just very thin and very gaunt features and stuff like that, so we built this prosthetic around him. And when we shot it, it wasn't quite right, so what you see in the film has kind of been digitally redone over him, what he was doing. So it's kind of like everything's smaller, like his lips are small. He's kind of got this Michael Jackson-esque appearance, like very sweet and innocent.
Yeah.
And it was just to make, because it's funny, it's just the disconnect. It's like, when you think of a monster in a film, you're thinking, we're in total spoiler territory, you think of scary, you want it to be scary, but it's an 8-year-old playing with it at the same time,
yeah.
So it can't be that scary. So it has to be almost sweet and innocent, but it's what it's doing and how it's corrupting these people and making them do these things that's what makes it scary. It's just this influence but it needs to be, you know, it has to have this appearance that's like, oh, sweet and playful, I can play with this thing. So that was a big part of it, is trying to find like this kid-like appearance, but big and gangly and just kind of, it's just off-putting. But, and it's also a situation where it's like Jaws, where the less you see it, the better.
Yeah.
Because the more you'd be like, oh, okay, it's just a dude and tall dude and spandex shorts.
Yeah, yeah, that's what we thought worked about it really well, is you saw just enough to scare you and let you know what was going on.
Totally.
Okay, there's something terrifying back here, but you didn't overexpose it.
Right.
Because like you said, if you see it too much, it's not scary anymore.
Right.
Definitely. Yeah, and then you already have, I mean, you have, there's like, it technically has like three different faces.
Mm-hmm.
You have what he projects to the son, what he's projecting to the mom, because he obviously, I mean, spoiler, wants to kind of ease his way back in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the image on the wall, which is completely, and then later when he, you know, some of the people get attacked, you kind of see that image on the wall come to life. So it's not, you know, what we see in the bathtub.
Right.
It's something completely different.
Yeah, and that was part of the design, was like, I like the idea of, it had this smile, and the original prosthetic is like an ear-to-ear smile, and it looked very Joker-esque, which is why we kind of changed it later, but the idea was basically like he's straining to keep his mouth closed and smiling so he'd get this appearance, but under that is just this like mouth of piranha teeth, so it's almost just like, it's just waiting to just unleash, but for now it's just uncomfortable, like giggling through this thing and stuff, but... You know, a lot of that doesn't really fully come through, but it does have the two different faces, especially there's the closed mouth and then the open mouth. But yeah, that's tough, because in Hollywood they have people that are just there to come up with this cool stuff. Like, here's 20 designs, pick one. And we don't have that, so it's just like, I don't know.
I didn't even think about that. It didn't take me out of the movie at all. I wasn't like, I'm not a big CGI person, but it didn't take me off, because the drawing itself...
Mm-hmm.
was so menacing and just like huge, and like the charcoal, like the way that it just looked fantastic.
Cool.
And I have to say, there are two scenes in the film that are genius. I just love, I mean, that's a big word to throw out, but
I like it.
I
take it when you get it.
Yeah, exactly.
I really enjoyed which now that I'm thinking about it, kind of slightly reminded me of the scene in Poltergeist, but it's nothing connected to that. It's just the whole scene in towards the end with the dad in the room and the toys.
Oh, cool.
Just the way that you use the light in there and have all the toys, which is from, you know, from the father's standpoint, he's a logical person. Right. He doesn't believe in anything that's going on, but something illogical was happening. Totally. And to see his reaction to that and just like the way you're going panning back, like you're showing the father's face and like he's really focusing on that image.
Sure.
And then have what happens. I was like, awesome. I was like, holy shit, that scene's great. I was like, ah!
That's funny because that was the last scene locked in the film. Like, we had already started the sound mix, and it was like, work around that scene because we didn't have it yet. You know, and I cut the film, and I had to cut that scene several different ways because when we shot it, we had like an hour to shoot it, and it was like the end of the day. The guy was in makeup just sitting and waiting and stuff. So we had this whole thing of him coming out and like coming, and it just wasn't working. It didn't look right. So I had to kind of strip it and rebuild it and kind of VFX some different shots that weren't even like, there's a wide shot of him when he turns and he sees it and stuff. And that's just like four different scenes from four different shots in the movie stitched together to create that.
Wow.
And that was just part, like I had to figure something out because it just wasn't working. So I am happy to hear that it does work in that sense, but it's just, yeah, it's tough because you don't want to show too much of him again, because the more you show, you know, and it's such a weird point in the movie that in most movies that would be the finale, you know?
Yeah.
Like this movie was really heavily inspired by The Orphan, or I think it's just Orphan. And I mean, it's very similar. We've got the mom driving home from the hospital, and the orphan is in the house with Peter Skarsgård, and it's very similar in feel, and it's got this rush feeling. But that's the climax of the film, whereas this is like the end of the second act. There's a whole other thing waiting for you as an audience. So,
yeah, that was what I liked that part of it too.
Because you're like, oh my god, there's still 40 minutes left or 30 minutes left. What's going on?
This can't be over yet.
Yeah,
and then totally. Yeah, and I know the other scene that you're talking about, and the great part about it, we won't go over a spoilers, but it's when she goes to her friend's house.
Okay. Yeah, that's my favorite.
Yeah, and that's a scene that it's very subtle.
Uh-huh.
You don't see much of anything,
uh-huh.
but it just, I literally looked away for a second to pick something up, and then she screamed. I'm like, what did I miss? We had to run it back and watch it again. It was just so great that it just plays out in the background,
right.
kind of. And you don't really see anything, but that just makes it even scarier.
For
the
sure.
suggestion, even though you see what happens, but the suggestion of it and the sounds that occur, it's just like what you're conjuring up is so much worse than,
for sure.
I mean, obviously what's happening is pretty terrible,
of course.
But you're like, oh my gosh, that's exactly what that would sound like
right.
if something like that would happen.
Yeah.
So it's just terrifying. And then, you know, you have the other, you know, actress across that's dealing with it, and she's telling her like, hey, I have to protect my son. And then boom,
right. the one window of opportunity they have to where she's not able to protect him
is
when that happens. That was funny to shoot. And we did shoot the kid at the bottom, like we have footage of it, but I really loved the way that she's looking down at it and stuff, and you just see her reaction. It's just like nothing we show could ever match what she's seeing, you know? So it's just, I mean, unless you have like an It Follows leg bend, you know, like that classic opening scene, it's just like, you can't match that. So
all the actors in the movie did a great job of selling, but you I'm sure you've seen the movies where you can tell the people are not quite convinced of what they're seeing.
Uh-huh.
But here you believe that they were all seeing everything, and they did a great job with it.
Cool.
This actually wasn't my scene, but my favorite scene. I mean, I love that scene.
Oh, cool.
So I guess there's actually three scenes.
Nice.
The scene that I loved out of, probably if I had to put them in order, I would say that was my number one pick, and then two would be the toys,
sure.
and then three would be that. Or they're all going to be number one. Let's just put them all number one.
That's fine.
Is the scene later on when she's in the house and she's sitting opposite of the table.
Oh, cool.
And there's, you know, someone's not happy. She goes, brings back the cup.
Uh-huh.
And the way that you did that of like showing her and then showing that, and it's just like slightly going down the table, and then you see that there's milk has been drunk out of the glass. I was just like, this is so fucking amazing. Because you don't really, I mean, there's so many films about, I mean, you got like Annabelle, and it's like, oh, they happen to be a demon, and you know, you have all these other ones where they're imaginary friends and stuff like that, but you never see anything like that. It's either you see whatever it is doing it,
sure,
But the suggestion and just the way that you don't have to have a lot of money in order, obviously, to right. make a great quality film mm-hmm. and make it believable in that same sense. And right. you did a great job with doing that.
Cool,
and you definitely accomplished that. That was obviously a very, I love that scene.
Yeah, that scene when we first had the idea to do the whole third act as it was, that was one that was really exciting because it's just like, I mean, we shot more stuff that ended up being cut there in that scene, or not that scene, but that whole sequence. And it was just like very, very life, like day in the life of standard living with someone. And all the coverage was always there, but there's no one there. It's just an empty frame. So it's just like you're reacting. She's react. You know, all this stuff's happening. But it's just funny because when you're framing, it's like, yeah, I think that's how tall he'd be. Like, yeah. like looking at the monitor, like, okay, yeah, that works. That's a good over the shoulder for him, I guess. You know,
maybe he's bent down.
Yeah. yeah. So you're like trying to figure that out. But that was really fun where you're just like, but you can't live in that world too much because you just got to keep the narrative going. Because, you know, you're kind of thrown into the situation where she doesn't know, or we as an audience are thrown into the situation where we're like, we don't know what's going on. And then we start realizing, like, okay, she's not totally crazy. She's got an idea of how to handle this. It really backfires, but, yeah. That was a really fun part to shoot. And it was great because Keegan, who I love, was just able to go to a really weird place and live there for a week, because that was the last week of shooting, was her alone. And it was just, she's just in this kid's outfit, and just, she's just dirty and gross, and she got to be really kind of just so fucked up. it was amazing to shoot. She was so wonderful.
That's what we're going to ask next, like, how did you go about casting people in the film? Because in particular, the actor that plays the psychiatrist, uh-huh. Stephen McCaddy,
uh-huh.
he is great. I've seen him in so many movies, right. and he's one of those people that when you see him in the movie, you automatically know it's going to be good because he always brings it up a notch, uh-huh. you know?
He's definitely like a genre icon. You know, everybody knows him from somewhere. He's been, you know, he's been working forever. And yeah, he definitely brings a lot of authenticity to any character I think he plays. But the casting was, it's weird. I mean, it's such a low budget film that you can't go out to people and you can't just offer, you know, you can't give Emily Blunt $5 million to do your yeah. movie, so it's tough. So you're asking casting agents and stuff to send, and a casting agent that we know in Vancouver sent us Keegan and another woman's tape, and I loved Keegan's vibe from it. It was like we couldn't get her to read or anything because we're not at that level, but we had a good sampling of her work, and she's been in so many TV shows, Bates Motel, The Magicians, all this stuff. So we had a good amount to look at, and I just loved her look, and she just felt like a mother that was that would be great at taking this to the edge, and she was, you know, she was just amazing. But and Sean Rogerson, I worked with him briefly on Stillborn. He was in there for a little bit, and he was in Grave Encounters, which, you know, Colin, who wrote it with me, he that was his film. He kind of got Sean his break on that, and he's just, you know, the best guy to work with. So when I had the husband character, I was just like, I want to get Sean because I loved working with him. I'd love to work with him more, and he's just a great guy. And then with Jed, it was kind of funny because when we just started casting, we put out a Facebook post first, like, hey, we're looking for an 8-year-old. No expectations before we bring a casting agent on. But literally the very first person to reply was Jet's mom, Destiny. And she wrote us, sent us his headshot and shit. And it was just like, wow, like, this kid looks great. And we looked, and he's in The Boy. He's in Skyscraper. With, you know, he's just at the start of it. But still, he's 9 years old when we shot, and he's got a ton of credits.
Oh, yeah, so he sure does.
So we had a call and stuff, and he's very professional. His mother's, you know, there's always the fear of the show mom, but, you know, Destiny was great and everything. So they were very game for us because we don't have a lot of money. You know, we can't pay them a lot. He would be, you know, he can do a million other things, but he wanted to do us because he liked the script and everything. But he came, and it's just, you know, everyone's always like kids and animals, and I've done Baby on Stillborn, and now I've done 8-year-old Boy, and it's been great. It's been a pleasure. He was awesome. So we got lucky.
Yeah, everybody in there turned out really well. They really sell the whole family.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, they have a great chemistry with all of them. Uh-huh. Even like I said, with Stephen McCaddy playing the psychiatrist, you know, you feel like he really does care about her. And, cool. you know, when he shows up later and is trying to help,
right.
you get the feeling it's not out of any kind of malice. Yeah. You know, he's really just trying to help her because right. he cares about her.
There's a history there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Sarah Cannon came in to do the sister, and she was amazing, too. I love just their scenes together where they're laughing and smoking together.
Yeah.
There's just this natural sisterly feeling between them that I think they pulled off you know, so awesome.
So I ask everyone, if you could be part of any horror universe, who or what universe would that be? You may die, because this is a horror universe.
That's what I'm like. I mean, there's so many different horror. It's like, could I be not related to the family in Hereditary? Then I could just live a normal life. That's fine.
There you go.
And I could just be normal.
You just live in that nice neighborhood?
Yeah, I don't want to live with them. I don't want nothing to do with them, but I could live near them. That would be fine.
There's some nice houses there. So you could live in that place. Yeah.
I don't know. I think you're connected to that family. I think it's not gonna work.
I guess, but everybody there seemed to be related to the family, so that's a bad choice.
Well, you can tell us about what is your release date and where can we find the film?
Not sure yet. We have a distributor that we're just signing right now, so it's not public yet. It should be soon. So look for news on that. But it probably won't be coming out until next year, early next year.
Okay.
But you'll see it. It's on a horror-specific service that everybody knows.
Okay.
You'll see.
But, Hulu.
It's Hulu. No. But yeah, it should be. It'll be around, I'm sure. Okay. It'll do well.
We will follow it, definitely. Cool. And we really enjoyed it. We recommend it. We usually give knives to things. Uh-huh. So out of 5 knives, I'll give it 4 knives.
Nice.
Okay. Me too.
Nice.
So thank you so much for joining us. No, we really appreciate you taking out the time to speak with us. And, you know, we look forward to seeing more. We will definitely go back. I have a reasoning why I didn't see the previous film, but I'll tell you off the podcasting thing here.
Okay.
But we'll definitely keep updated with the things. We'll post on our site, like when it comes out and everything, let everybody know.
Cool. That'd
Thank you great. So much, guys, for joining us, and stay tuned to the horror.
Thanks, guys.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.